Today's reading is from Matthew. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. He said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous?" The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
So we're in a series on God's grace. I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning. And just want to say an added word to Jeff Rogers. Great job this morning. Well done and a great, great start. The Rudder Anthem that you sang, I didn't know you guys were doing that today. And that was sung at our wedding when we got married. So very special song and wonderful, wonderful music and choir and orchestra. Well, we continue our grace series today with one of the better known parables of Jesus. Makes us think about fairness. A couple weeks ago, I was driving about the time the traffic for the schools really picks up and got stuck in front of a school. You know, the parents who take their kids to school, it kind of backs the traffic up on the street. So a traffic cop was out, stopped all the traffic. And while I'm sitting there waiting, I'm watching the parents drive up in front of the school, drop their kids off, and I started getting a little nostalgic, thinking about what felt like just a few years ago when I would take our girls to school in the morning. And as I'm watching this and remembering it, I'm almost to the point of getting misty when I remembered what typically would go on in the car on the way to school. And every morning, it seemed like the same debate happened in which this sentence would always be said, daily refrain, "Dad, that's not fair." It had to do with where the kids sat. Now, if you're not a parent of a small child, there's an important thing to know. Seating arrangement priority in a car, back seat middle, least preferred. Back seat left or right, second best, highly favored front passenger seat. So with our three girls, there was an argument every day over whose turn it was to sit in the front seat. And no matter what I choose, two of the three were mad at me. And were always saying, "Dad, that's not fair." Now, somewhere along the line, I realized my mistake. I was trying to make it fair. That's what I was doing wrong. I was trying to make it fair. I would try to remember whose turn it was. And two of the three were always challenging my recollection. So then I started writing out a chart. Now that's pretty fail-proof, isn't it? Put it on the visor, flip the visor down. Nope, says Tuesday, that one is sitting here. But then you would have snow days or holidays. It would throw the chart off. No matter what, I'd have to get used to hearing, "Dad, that's not fair." Somewhere during this time, I read and studied this parable of Jesus of the laborers in the vineyard. And I love the line of the vineyard owner at the end of the story. He says to the workers, "I'm not treating you unfairly. Am I not able to do what I want with what I have? Or do you resent my generosity?" So I decided to practice a little biblical justice on my children. The next morning, the seating arrangement argument started. I said, "Now wait, my beloved children. Am I being unfair with you? Or is my contract not to get you to school on time every day? Am I not able to let people sit in my car where I choose? Or do you resent my generosity? Did I get up early and get out the door earlier than I normally would so that you don't have to ride the bus? I suggest from now on that you ride quietly in the morning. And when we arrive at your school, you open the door and get out and say these words, 'Thank you, my loving, gracious father.' And if you cannot, then I suggest you set your alarm a little earlier than usual, lace up your shoes, and walk to school." To which they said, "Dad, yeah, I heard enough of that in my time. It got me over that mistiness real quick the other morning." My girls are, of course, grown now. They're adults. It's been a long time since they've argued over who gets to sit in the front seat. And my guess is they've had a lot of experiences since that have confronted them with the reality that life is not always fair. And with each confrontation, my guess is they've had an opportunity to ask a question, to ask a very important question, a question that's bigger than seating arrangements and parental practices, a question that captures the tension between this world and the spiritual world as well as any question. The question is, do I want to live in a fair world or a good world? Do I want to live in a fair world or a good world? Many people would say yes. We want both. Because is not a good world a fair world? Is not a good world where everybody gets treated the same and everybody gets the same because they give the same? That is a good world. But the Bible teaches that our ways are not God's ways. And Jesus had a way of teaching stories that pointed out the tension between our world and God's world that would always leave us asking, which world do I really want? Which one do I prefer? Today's parable is one of those stories. Like most of Jesus' parables, it's fictitious. It's made up, but it's based on a very real-life scene. Any village in Palestine during harvest season would have seen workers gathering on a street corner in the early morning hours hoping that a farm owner would come by looking for workers and give them employment. So Jesus begins his story in a recognizable fashion. Early one morning, an owner went out to hire workers. Now, there are two parts to this story. The part that we could call the deal, and the part that we could call the switch. And to appreciate this story, we have to know some of the inside symbolism and meaning of parts of the story, beginning with the vineyard. Whenever you read a story about a vineyard in the Bible, you know that it's talking about the nation of Israel. Listen to this verse from Isaiah. "The vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the house of Israel. over the doors of the temple were giant carvings of great clusters, and it reminded worshipers, when you enter this place, you are a part of God's nation and God's people. As a way of remembering what's your mission in the world, you are to be a light to the nations. So whenever a story is told involving a vineyard, you know that this is going to be a story for God's people about how they are to live in the world as God's witnesses. In this parable, we know it's about how we are to live in the world as God's witnesses. So the second part of the story to understand is the denarius. That was the coin used to pay a day laborer. This would have been the pay equal to an unskilled laborer, an unskilled worker. Today, we would say the denarius represents minimum wage, the amount of minimum wage if that worker worked a full day. So let's talk about the work day last of all. Typically, the work day was 12 hours, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. During harvest time, that's when the sunlight allowed for a full 12 hours day of work. So if you were a day laborer who worked a full day and got a denarius, how much are we talking about? Let's put it in today's economy. The minimum wage in Indiana is $7.25 an hour. That minimum wage has not changed in one decade, even though the cost of living over the last 10 years has risen sharply. Our minimum wage has not changed at all in Indiana. $7.25 an hour. So if a day laborer, a minimum wage worker, worked a full day before tax was taken out, that would be $87. Now, if you worked less than a full day, you could do the math and figure it out. You would take the percentage of your day and multiply it by the denarius, and that's what you can expect to receive. So this owner goes out early in the morning and says to the all-day workers, I will pay you a denarius. That is fair. That is what's to be expected. You could say that's justice. It's interesting that there are people who say the reason they don't like the Old Testament is because the Old Testament harps on justice, and the New Testament harps on grace. But the whole Bible teaches a truth that you can't have true justice without grace. Look at this verse from the book of Deuteronomy. Don't abuse a laborer who is destitute and needy, whether he's a fellow Israelite living in your land and in your city. Pay him at the end of the day, each work day. He's living from hand to mouth and needs it now. There is no justice without grace. So back to the story. The owner makes a fair deal with the workers who work all day. And then he keeps coming back. He hires people at 9 o'clock, at noon, at 3, at 5. But this time, he doesn't give them that same deal. He doesn't tell them what they're going to be paid. He said, I'll pay you what's fair. I'll pay you what's fair. Now, what would you expect? Take the percentage of your day, multiply it by the denarius. You can expect what you're going to make, right? It's going to be a fair pay. So you take the deal. Now, let me ask you. If you were working all day in the field, hot sun, bending over most of the day for $87 before tax, would you take that deal? I wouldn't. I wouldn't because I don't have to. But there are people in our world who do have to. There are people in our world who take that deal because they don't have anything to feed their family otherwise. They don't have any way even to make it at a bare minimum of whatever making it means if they don't take that deal. So the laborer, the worker, the owner, comes back at 5 o'clock, one more attempt, 1 hour to go in the day to hire people and find some people still standing there. And this time, the laborer appears to be harsh and cruel. He says to the people, why are you just standing around doing nothing? Have you ever wanted to say that about people? Have you ever heard the stories about people who can't work and can't find employment, and you drive by their houses and they're sitting on their front porch and you say, that's what's wrong with this country. They're just people who don't want to work. There are jobs to be had out there. They're just sitting around doing nothing. My friend Charles Harrison has a church in a high unemployment area around 30th Street and Martin Luther King Boulevard. He hosts job fairs to try to find employment for people. Every time he hosts a job fair, he says 2,000 to 3,000 people show up for no more than what will be 100 jobs offered. Now, who gets the job out of the 2,000 to 3,000? He said, well, it's kind of easy to figure out. The ones who get the jobs are the ones who can get to the jobs. He says, many times the companies with jobs are so far out of town, public transportation in the city of Indianapolis doesn't get you there. And not many people have a car. Those who do have a much better chance of getting the job. He said, the second problem is we've got a lot of people with a criminal record. We've got folks who just did dumb things in their youth that they regret, but they've got a record. And if you're hiring for a job and you've got somebody with no record and somebody who does, who do you get the job to? So who does not get a job? The ones who get picked over. The owner goes out at 5 o'clock. There's still people standing there. Why are you still standing here? They say, because no one hired us, because we got picked over. They're there. They're still showing up. They're still looking for a job. They're still holding out hope against hope that maybe they'll find a way to get something to even bring home a few crackers for supper. So what does this part of the story teach us about God? The owner represents God, and what Jesus is saying to us is that God is a God who is always on the lookout to bring people into the vineyard. God never stops. 11th hour people are welcomed in. Even in their 11th hour, when they're ready to give up, God still welcomes. God is always ready to welcome and never gives up on anybody. God never gives up on you. That's the deal. So now the switch. Jesus says it's the end of the workday, and the laborers get in a line to get paid, and the first ones in line are the ones who only worked 1 hour, going back to the ones who worked all day. And the ones who are standing at the front of the line, they've only worked 1 hour, perhaps expecting just to get a few pennies, are told, you get a whole denarius. You get an entire day's wage. Now, how do you think they reacted? Now, if I'm the employer dealing with employees here at St. Luke's, I'm leaning over and I'm saying, now, if you would, don't tell anybody what we're giving you right now. Not everybody's going to get the deal that you're getting, so please, please, don't show any signs of rejoicing. Keep it to yourself. But they don't. They start celebrating and hooting and hollering, and it gets down the line what just happened. And the ones at the end are going, if that's what they got, they're doing the math. They're doing the math. But each one gets the same. And the ones at the end of the line get what they agreed on, and they don't like it. And they grumble against the owner as if he somehow cheated them. And the owner says, have I been unfair? You are getting what you wanted. Get out of here. That's the way you wanted life. You got what you earned. Go on. Don't be resentful because I'm generous. What is Jesus teaching? What would Jesus have us believe about God's character and the world that God wants you and me to live in? I believe there are two possibilities. One of them is this: God dispenses gifts, not wages. God dispenses gifts, not wages. God is a God who gives better than deserved. God has no interest in compensation, in giving people what they merit, in giving people nothing more than what they have earned by their good behavior. God has no interest in that. God wants to provide people gifts. God wants to offer people something to get excited about, to rejoice over, to say at the end of the day, I got better than I deserved. But the ones at the end of the line, they want a fair world. They want a quid pro quo world, something for something. Everyone gets what they have merited. And in this story, Jesus is inviting people who've ever lived under those kind of conditions to ask, do you want to celebrate something different? If you think about this story, if it looked anything true to life, the people in line probably all knew each other, wouldn't you think? I mean, they were probably neighbors. They knew each other's conditions. They knew what each other needed to live on. The ones at the end of the line, when they heard what just happened, they could have been ready to high-five them and to celebrate. Oh, my gosh, you got a whole day's wait. Man, I wish I'd waited till 5 o'clock. Awesome. Awesome. You get to go home and feed your family. You're going to eat. In fact, we all got the same thing. This was a good day. In fact, let's all have a giant pitch-in tonight. Let's have a celebration. Let's have a feast on the front lawn and have the whole neighborhood over. They could have done that, but instead they went home to eat sour grapes because now they can't even enjoy what they've got. Something else I think Jesus is teaching us in this story is about God's justice. And it's that God's justice is based on equity, not equality. God's justice is based on equity, not equality. Maybe you've seen this illustration before, the difference between equality and equity. Equality is a picture of three kids wanting to watch the baseball game over the fence. They're of different height. The tallest one can see over the fence with no problem. The middle one, maybe just barely, the third one not at all. So equality says, give them all the same. Give them each a box to stand on. Well, the first one, the fence is now at his waist. The second one is now able to see, but the third one still can't see. But hey, that's equality, isn't it? Everybody get the same. Equity says, we're not interested in everybody getting the same. We're interested in everybody getting what they need. So with equity, you take the box away from the first one, and you give it to the third one. And now everybody can see. That's how God's grace works. God's grace is not concerned with everybody getting the same, but everybody getting what they need. I learned this lesson at a restaurant one night. One thing you need to know about me is I really despise waiting, and especially at restaurants. When we go to a restaurant out to eat and we find out how long the wait is going to be, if it's more than 20 minutes, I will drive around and spend longer time than that looking for a restaurant that doesn't have a line with it. But one night I got talked into waiting. My family really wanted to try this restaurant, and we arrived and went to the hostess booth, and she told us the deal. You're going to wait 45 minutes. That's the deal. Okay, my family knowing, I'm already like, they say, Dad, let's go outside and we'll enjoy some family time together. So we go outside, we sit down, we're starting to converse about what's going on in each other's lives, but I can't help but watch everybody else waiting. And with each name that's called and a group leaves, I watch the new arrivals. And now I have been there long enough to size up just when everybody arrived and who should be next and what's going to be fair. And I'm pretty proud of myself at this point because I'm multitasking. I'm paying attention to my family, and I'm also monitoring the justice of the waiting area of the restaurant. And they should have thanked me for that. But then a family came in, and they had no more than sat down when their table got called, and they got up and walked out. And I look around, and I know that there are other families that have been there longer than us, and nobody calls out this abhorrent injustice. And I thought either they didn't know it happened, or they're too afraid to address it with the powers that be, but I'm not. So I walk up to the hostess booth as the waiter is leading them to their table. And once they are away, I lean over to her and I say, now, ma'am, there are other families here who have been waiting much longer than that family. And she interrupts me. And she says, they needed a table with special accessibility. And in that moment, I felt somebody brush past my shoulder, pushing a wheelchair. with somebody who could obviously not walk. And they go on through the restaurant to their table. I look back at this hostess, and she is looking at me clearly as if saying, "You should feel like an idiot right now." So I said to her, "And you didn't let me finish. I wanted to tell you that there are other families who have been waiting longer, and they will not understand the special accommodation that this family has. And I hope that will not let you not do the right thing, and you did, and I came to say good job." And then I walked back to Susan and said, "Let's go to another restaurant." When I get low on grace, I get big on judgment. When I get big on judgment, I get big on criticism. And when I get big on criticism, I get really big on resentment. And maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. But I don't know. Our parking lot attendants would say not so, as they watch how folks drive out of church some Sunday mornings. They would say that we all get challenged from time to time to practice the grace that we desire. And if it's ever been a challenge for you to break out of that world of wondering, are people getting what they deserve? Is everybody treated fairly? Can I just enjoy what I've got? Can I celebrate the moment that I'm in instead of just being critical about what other people are getting that they should not have gotten if I ever struggle? Let me just offer a couple of things that it helps me sometimes. One is this: make a ledger for yourself. Draw a line down a blank sheet of paper, and on one side at the top of the page, write "bad things I did not deserve," and list every bad thing you've ever had happen that you can possibly remember you didn't deserve. The newspaper deliverer forgot your paper one morning. The person at the drive-thru cheated you out of your change. You got jumped over for a promotion at work. You got fired unfairly. You got accused wrongly. A former spouse did this to you. You name it all. Then on the other side of the sheet, write the good things that happened to you that you didn't deserve. The job that you got only because you happened to know somebody. The person who gave you a favor. The bonus you were not expecting. The neighbor who helped you on a task that you didn't know they were going to do. List every good thing you can remember, and at the end of it, see which list is longer. And if the one on the left is longer, just ask yourself, is that possibly because those are the things I hold on to versus the other? If your list is even, at the end of the day, you write it all down and you go, "Well, yeah, it's even. I've had as much bad stuff happen as good stuff." Well, guess what? At least celebrate the fact that you're not losing. Celebrate that you're breaking even. But my guess is, if we all remember fairly, the list on the right is longer. Here's another little practice you might try, and it has helped me. I learned it from Bishop Coyner in our church, and that is to practice random tipping. We think about tipping in restaurants. Tip any service provider. He says that when he's at a hotel about to check out in the morning, he leaves a tip for the people who come in to clean the room, because he says those are folks who don't make much, and they're working hard, and I want to leave them a tip. I stopped at a service station one time that had just been built next to my church. And I was getting home from an out-of-town appointment. It was late at night, like almost midnight. And I knew I'd got to fill up with gas because what? I've got to take kids to school the next morning. So I pull in at midnight, pump my gas. I go inside to pay. And there is a really elderly woman working at midnight in this convenience store. And I'm kind of surprised by that. So I introduce myself and I get to know her. She said, "Oh, I just moved here. I came to take care of my daughter, who is really sick, and she can't work right now, so she's not making any income, and I don't have that much, so I had to take this job to help make ends meet." You know, when I start thinking about how can I just practice generosity and give some grace somewhere. It gets me out of my own self-focused world about whether I'm getting everything I deserve. And it just makes me aware of other people. Those are just two little things to try to think about being a person of grace. I brought the traffic thing up. I'll probably regret sharing this. I've been debating whether or not to share it. We had a little incident earlier this summer. One Sunday after church, as people were leaving, one of the neighbors on Holiday Drive, their dog got hit. And they believe it was by somebody leaving St. Luke's. Fortunately, the dog did not die. The dog is now doing well. We paid for their vet bill so that we could try to just help ease that as much as possible. But what troubled me was some things I'd been hearing from other neighbors. There's just a frustration about traffic when we leave the church. And what people will say is, that's St. Luke's. And it's not in a real positive tone of voice. That's St. Luke's. Those people just pull out. They don't pay attention to their speed. They're racing through. That's St. Luke's. And I go, oh, man, that is not St. Luke's. The St. Luke's I know was this overwhelming community of grace. And sometimes, if you're like me at all, you've got to be reminded to just put it into practice and to go out and look for ways to bless people and give to people. And when you go down the street and you're eating at Boston Market, or you go to Wendy's and give an extra tip to the attendant and tell them why. Say, I'm trying to be a good member of my church, and I want to show grace to everybody I can. And look for ways to extend it so that the people say what's true about us. That's St. Luke's. Jesus wants us all to find ourselves in the story. It's easy for me to find myself. I'm the all-day worker. I'm at the end of the line, and I'm mad that I didn't get better than I should have. Some of us may say, I don't know, maybe I'm the 3 o'clock worker. But you know what? Jesus would say, every one of us is the latecomer. Every one of us is the one who's getting so much better than we deserve, because the main character of the story is not any of the workers. The main character is the owner of the vineyard, a loving and gracious, hospitable God who's always on the lookout to welcome people into his vineyard of grace. Amen.